Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Jets fans, want $50 off your next round of drinks? Try TapRM. They deliver the drinks right to your door so you can skip the lines and trips to the liquor store. Discover new and exclusive drinks or shop for your favorites. Don't worry, they've got all the options for you. Order your first round at TapRM.com and get $50 off your first order using promo code JETS50. $50 off $100 a beer, not a bad deal. I would highly recommend it. I've done it. Connor's done it. Joe's gotten it. So make sure you go to TapRM.com, use promo code JETS50, skip the lines, and get $50 off your first $100 worth of beer. $100 in beer for $50, can't beat that. Now let's get into the pod.
Setting up, looking downfield. He's going to heave a bomb for Corey Davis at the goal line, into the end zone. He's got it! That's a Jet touchdown!
Select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a special guest today, host of the Pre and Post on SNY. Mets reporter as well, Steve Gallup. Steve, how you doing today?
I'm hanging in, Will. I mean, yesterday wasn't the greatest, but 24 hours later, we'll try to power through a little bit. I'm glad we finally got to do this, though. We've been trying to get this done for about a week, and then I got sick, and then you had something come up. So glad we finally have a chance to chop it up
here. I know. I was excited. We were kind of texting back and forth about what we thought was going to happen, and I think we were both not expecting a lot, but we somehow got even more disappointed than I thought was humanly possible. What were your, I guess, initial takeaways from yesterday, kind of big picture, then we'll get into the Zach Wilson stuff?
Yeah, you know, I think yesterday was the first day where I was kind of alarmed. I mean, I think, you know, I had gone into this season ready to be as patient and open to the growing pains as I think I've ever been. I mean, obviously it's a little bit of a different season for me covering the team, doing pre and post versus just being, you know, a fan sitting in the stands for the last 30 years. But I really thought that under Joe Douglas and now with Robert Saleh, I thought they were doing things the right way. They've talked about rebuilding for, you know, a decade plus, but this was the first time that it seemed like they were really doing it. You know, the youngest team in the league, building through the drafts, building the offensive defensive line brick by brick. I mean, they seem like they were going in the right direction. And I still, by the way, think they are going in the right direction. But what alarmed me about yesterday is, and really it's kind of back-to-back weeks now where I think you're just not seeing any sort of progress. And in a lot of respects, you're seeing some regression. And the biggest concern for me was after the bye week and after all the talk about how they did some soul searching, they corrected a lot of things, they knew what was going to be fixed, to come out and look that unprepared, that overmatched, really that beaten from snap one, that's what kind of hit me. And so I'm not giving up hope for what this regime is going to be or what this group is going to be. But, you know, we need to see something here moving forward. And right now we're not seeing it.
Yeah, yesterday was a bit weird for me because I felt like that, like you mentioned, back-to-back weeks, they're getting out-coached like pretty badly. And it's not like, you know, obviously Belichick has – the Patriots were 0-4 at home. They hadn't looked good, really. And even the first matchup, I felt the Jets were very competitive. It's just, obviously, you can't account for four interceptions.
I mean, I thought the Jets outplayed New England in that first game.
Yeah, they ran the ball well. Yeah. Defense played well. They had the one – Damian Harris had one run, but other than that, it felt like the Jets played pretty well. It was still a 10-3 game, even with all those interceptions, like, in the second quarter at one point. But yesterday, I just felt like they – like, I don't want to say they quit because that's, like, a huge indictment, and I don't
I don't know that that's actually what happened. I don't know if they were like lost. I know, sorry, but Bart pointed this out on the post game yesterday. It was like, they look lost. Like they almost looked like they didn't know where they're going. And I don't know. That's the stuff that I can't take really.
Yeah. That's what was kind of, again, the word I use is alarming to me is I think you look at this two separate ways, right? The offense has been one thing all year, and the offense has looked, you know, a certain way that has been concerning all season. Right. And I think, you know, Mike LaFleur has looked overmatched, and that's, you know, that's another element of all this that, again, I'm kind of willing to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. We talk about a young team. You've got an extremely young coaching staff as well. And you do have to give these guys some time to find their footing. And right now, Mike LaFleur, you know, has not found that footing yet. That has been an issue though, from day one. The defense has been an enormously pleasant surprise. And I think the thing about yesterday that kind of shocked you is that as soon as you take CJ Mosley out of there, it seems like they don't have any idea what they're doing. And one player, listen, a veteran player like that should have an impact, but he shouldn't have that level of impact. It shouldn't look so entirely different without him in there. And that was what Bart was talking about. He said, you know, you took the brains out of the operation. And so these guys are physically talented for sure, but to keep getting beat the same way, to have such a difficult time with the screen game, the way that they have really all season, starting in that Tennessee game and then into Atlanta and then certainly this week against New England, the fact that they can't correct that is scary to me. That is the part that stood out about yesterday to me.
Yeah, it was weird yesterday too that, like, you know, the Tennessee game and at points in the Atlanta game, it felt like they were getting a ton of pressure on Tannehill, and then they got pressure but too late on Matt Ryan. So you kind of understood it, but they were being super overly aggressive. It's a lot of part of this defense, and the screen game could beat you from time to time. But yesterday was like the Patriots did the same thing every single drive. It was like run, screen pass or something in the flat, and then just like 30 yards of space every time. And
yeah,
I think JJ pointed it out last night on SNY. He was like, Mosey's great, but like he's not worth 30 points. Like, you know, from a baseball perspective, like he's not a 20 war player. Like he's a good, really good player. And that's awesome. But
well, by the way, just to follow up on that, I mean, LeJay said this on the post game show yesterday as well, that from a defensive line perspective, you know, a lot of these guys are young, yes, but these are the types of things you hope that you learn that at some point, maybe not right off the bat, but at some point, if all of a sudden they're just releasing and giving you a free shot at the quarterback, you need to, in the back of your mind, say, well, they're not just going to obviously let me go after this guy. It's a screen. I gotta stop and I gotta get off in pursuit. So that lack of recognition, that lack of smarts, that lack of situational awareness, that is the thing that I think you can point to and say, what's happening here?
Yeah, and even look at the defensive line. The defensive line, it's a really young team, but the defensive line has guys that have at least been in the NFL 2, 3, 4 years now. It's not like Sheldon Rankins is not – he's on his second contract. He's looking for a second contract. Like JFM's got his – you know, got paid. So it's not – they've definitely slowed down, and the depth's going to be tested of this team big time. Obviously, Jamien Sherwood now out for the season with Achilles, which is crazy. The Jets have had multiple Achilles in 1 year. Yeah. That's brutal, obviously. And I'm not saying that he's a make-or-break guy, but it would be nice to see him continue to get reps and see what you kind of have in him. I guess.
Yeah, and it's not, and this whole season is about getting those guys reps. You know what I mean? That's the point. The whole season is not about wins and losses. It's about getting those guys experience and getting better as the year progresses. So an injury like that, you know, it may not be a big blow to the wins and loss total of the 2021 Jets, but it is a big blow to where this team is trying to go.
Yeah, that was like always the thing with like Sam, and we'll get to Zach now, but like when Sam would get hurt, it's like you can't even see him develop if he's getting hurt all the time. And obviously he's struggling, you know, big time in Carolina. But I guess initial thoughts on it's bad news Zach is hurt. Obviously it's good news, only going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. It seems like I would assume he probably comes back after the Colts game, that little mini bye period they have. Doesn't seem to be too serious, although the describing your knee as loose and off was a little concerning.
Yeah, saying you heard it pop twice.
I'm sure it happened on the first hit, and the second one, it felt it. But what do you A, think of the hit? And B, what did the Jets kind of go from here? Mike White looked okay in the beginning, and then it started to collapse.
Well, You know, the one thing that's interesting to me, I mean, obviously this is a best case scenario. If it was a tear, I mean, it's a lost season. If Zach Wilson is out for the
year. Zach was done for the year. I don't know why he's turned on the TV.
Right. It's a lost season. You only turn on the TV to watch pre and post game just because we're that entertaining now, but no, but seriously, that is this entire season. We can talk about everything else, the development of the coaching staff, the development of all the other young players. It's about Zach Wilson. It's about the quarterback and you know, that progress hasn't quite been there yet. But for me, if I'm looking at this glass half full, yes, the injury is not ideal, but as it goes, it was the best case scenario, best news to come out of that MRI. You hope he's out only a couple of weeks, even if he's out a month, still, you know, enough games to get this thing righted. And for me, what I hope comes out of this is that Zach can take a step back and probably watch from a place that he was supposed to watch. Like, this is, I know it's the norm in the NFL in this day and age, but it's clear that Zach Wilson could use some time to take a step back and see it from a different perspective. And yeah, Mike White did not, you know, finish the way he started, but the offense looked much better. Let's be 100% honest. The offense looked much better with Mike White in there, which is, it's crazy to say, but what it points to is something that our guys have been talking about all season long, that Willie Legere, Bart, I mean, they highlighted this, especially after that Titans win, actually. They were talking more about the things that still made them nervous, is that Zach Wilson clearly has an incredible skill set and clearly feels comfortable off platform. And I mean, everything that you heard about him coming into the draft, you've seen, right? What you haven't seen are the easy throws. What you haven't seen is a willingness to take what the defense is giving you. And what Mike White did was come in and take what the defense is giving him. Now, this is not the future of the Jets. This is not somebody who's going to go in there and win games. But if he can run the offense and show Zach Wilson, hey, it's okay to check down and get 7-yard chunks. And then when you need to roll out of the pocket and you need to make something happen, you can force it down the field. Maybe it's a good thing. I mean, rookie quarterbacks, he's not going to be the first rookie quarterback that struggled in his first year and that maybe benefited from taking a step back. And so that's my hope, because the hard part of this, he kind of has down. It's the easy part that he needs to get better at. And quite frankly, I know you mentioned the injury. He might have, you know, injured it on that initial play where he held onto the ball too long and then got that late hit out of bounds. He claims that that's not what happened because it was the opposite knee. But the fact of the matter is, he is putting himself at risk by holding onto the ball too long. Forget about the offense not moving. You know, we're shouting, watching that play in, we have a room that we watch these games and we're shouting, get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball before he takes that late hit. So again, if you, it's one thing for the coaching staff to tell him, if you see Mike White making these plays, you see the offensive line looking a little better because he's standing in the pocket and you know, it's 1-2-3, boom, getting rid of the ball. I hope that long-term it could be a benefit to Zach Wilson, because I do think he's got all the talent in the world.
It's just funny that the last 2 years, the Jets with their starter look worse than they do with their backup, which is another issue, I guess. But yeah, no, I mean, I thought Zach looked fine yesterday in the first couple of drives. They kind of got rolling a little bit in that one drive where they missed the field goal, which I just don't understand. When you don't have a trustworthy kicker and you're already down 14, why you don't just, you know, Brandon Staley's going for it on his own 15-yard line with the Chargers, and it might not work every time, but the Jets kind of have free range to, like, be very aggressive and not get punished for it, you know, from the media, from whoever it is. And I don't like the decision to try to trust a kicker that, you know, that's a turning point in a game where, yeah, they probably weren't winning that game anyways, obviously the way it rolled out. But maybe you get a fourth down there and you get seven, you kind of get, you know, it's like that Titans game where Zach said, like, they hit that one out on third and 12 and it kind of just released the whole game. Yeah. But I agree.
I do wonder, by the way, not to cut you off, but I remember thinking this at the time too, like, you wonder if there's something too to just saying, let's get some first quarter points finally and get that narrative out of there. You know, in that moment,
they're the, like, first team since the 08 Lions to go 6 straight games without a quarter point, which is, they're probably the worst team in NFL history. So
That's not an ideal comparison right
now. No, I know. And like I said, I thought Zach was fine, but I also still feel like he's holding on the ball so long. And I don't know if he's doubting himself, but I know Jay pointed this out, like the first play, the first drop back. I mean, obviously the run pass thing was super frustrating coming out of the bye, but the guys were open, and like this offensive line doesn't handle stunts well. And GVR is a massive issue, but he had Jamison Crowder wide open, and it's like, he's not pulling the trigger. And I was hoping he wouldn't be gun shy going into New England. And I felt like he started out the game like a little gun shy, which I hated.
Yeah. And I don't know if it is that he's not trusting what he sees. I don't know if it's that he is somebody who, you know, really has had so much success by holding onto the ball, using his athleticism and making some dynamic plays that, you know, if you think about what this guy came from and what he was able to do in college and what, quite frankly, he's been able to do at times, flashing already in the NFL, the mindset has to change to that's the last resort, not that's what I'm trying to do. And I think you kind of have this mix of he's probably not trusting what he sees, but he's also somebody who probably doesn't want to take the short yardage right now. And that to me is what I wanted to see with Mike White, is to see how those drives can really sustain themselves by dinking, dunking, and picking up those yards, especially in this offense where, you know, the offense is built to get guys the ball in space and let them do their thing. And I'm sure we'll talk about Elijah Moore at some point today too. But, you know, that to me, it's like, do that more. I mean, you know, what we saw the two times that you got Elijah Moore, that you drew something up to get Elijah Moore the ball in space, he made something happen. And that's what, when you talk about what we want to see here while Zach's out, forget about everything else. Find a way to you know, showcase and feature Elijah Moore. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I did every week I do like, oh, I like things I'd like to see today and like from the Jets. And I literally said 10 combined targets between Mims and Moore. And I thought, you know, technically they got close, but like it's still Elijah Moore feels like he like is so close to breaking out. He obviously had the touchdown, which was awesome to see. And I was like, probably the biggest positive yesterday was like get him in the end zone and kind of look, see what we have in him. And there's the one screen pass you mentioned too. They just hit him on a quick screen. Why he was blocking on the next one doesn't really make sense to me. He's the smallest guy in their roster. But what do you feel like happens at receiver? Because it feels like trade deadline coming up. I've been of the boat that I think they should look into trading Keelan Cole more than Crowder, just because Crowder's more friendly for Zach over the middle, and Cole can maybe net you a fifth or sixth round pick and open up a spot for Mims. That said, what do you think kind of happens here? Because it feels like a position group I really liked going into the year. I still like, but it's like, I feel like we're not seeing, other than the Tennessee game, anything out of that group, really.
So the strange thing to me about this receiver group and what happens moving forward is, I agree with you. I was so excited to see what this group could do. I think I said on the first pregame show that, you know, the really exciting part to me about this season is that for the first time, you know, I don't think they're going to be very good in terms of wins and losses, but the offense is going to be dynamic. You know, the thing that bothered me the thing that bothered me the most about the Gase era, and there were a lot of things that bothered me, but the thing that bothered me the most is it's one thing to lose, but it's another thing to lose so boring the way that they did in a league that is so dynamic and so electric offensively and so so built towards making offenses cook, you know? I mean, that's what this league is. It's impossible to play defense. And so I was excited to see a group that would probably not win, but would lose 34-28, or, you know, that's what I was looking forward to seeing. And when I look at this trade deadline, yeah, I love Jamison Crowder. I think Jamison Crowder is one of the most underrated players in the league. I mean, this guy, all he does is make catches, make plays when you put him out there. But if I'm Joe Douglas, I have two objectives here at this trade deadline. It's, if you can get anything for some of these guys that you're not going to bring back, go get it. All right. Because it's, you know, I'm one for, especially this season, giving as much help to these guys to let them grow. But what's happening right now, I think, is that you actually have too many options for a coaching staff that doesn't seem totally aware of how to use all those options. And so, you know, I think it might have been Costello or Canizero wrote an article about this last week about trading Crowder to open up a spot for Elijah Moore. You know, if you could clear some bodies out of that wide receiver room so that your wide receiver group looks like Davis, Mims, Moore, I'd do it. You know, that to me, because we could talk about this until we're blue in the face. I have no idea what's going on with Mims. I have no idea what's going on behind the scenes with that coaching staff and Denzel Mims. He needs to play. And he needs to be starting. He needs to be on the outside. And you need to use Elijah Moore in the slot. You know, I think if Bart Scott talks about this one more time, his head's gonna explode. And so it's almost like give him fewer options. That's kind of my deal. And I think that this team, you need to, if you can still build and still get more compensation for guys that aren't gonna come back, do it. Especially because the way it's working right now, if this was something where Jamison Crowder and Keelan Cole were just lighting up the stat sheet and Zach Wilson was improving because of them, great, keep them. But if you can get something for them and worry about the other guys you want to develop, which is definitely Elijah Moore and I hope is still Denzel Mims, then that's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, I have no reason to believe they're not going to add another receiver either in free agency and or in the draft, more likely with a lot of these picks. But, I agree. It's interesting with the roster is like, it feels like there's a lot of like moves that can be made. Like, I love Foley Fatukasi. I think he's an emotional leader of this team. And I think he does a lot of great things, but I don't know that he's going to be back next year. And he's another guy that like, if you pick up an extra fifth round pick, maybe that's just an additional way you can do something or whatever the pick's going to be. Marcus May, I don't see getting traded. Not just because his agent's now backpedaling every single thing he tweeted today. And that was pretty comical. But I just think the Jets probably tested the waters and then they're not getting what they want in return. And there's no reason to trade one of your better players that you can then, he'll be back next year. It's not like a guy that's going to walk. But Foley, Crowder, I guess Keelan Cole as well. If the tight ends don't really have a lot of value, how frustrated, I guess, are you that they didn't address tight end more in the offseason because they're using them so much? And it's like,
yeah. So the way that I go about this is that Rome wasn't built in a day. And that's how I thought about this offseason as well. So does it frustrate me? Yeah, it frustrates me if I thought they should be there right now. But I think, again, I like a lot of the things they did. It frustrated me more, to be quite honest, that they didn't go out and address corner. And I've been beyond pleasantly surprised with that young cornerback group. So, I trust Joe Douglas. I really do. And actually, as in terms of where the lack of addressing tight end is on the list, it's kind of third. I actually thought they should have brought in a veteran quarterback behind Zach Wilson, number two, just for the mentorship more than anything else.
And also if this happens, at least they can be competitive in a game. Like, I don't know that you can pick the Jets either week. Not that you would anyways, yeah, with Mike White, as opposed to a Foles or somebody of that nature.
Totally. It's frustrating because they have a clear need, but they had a clear need literally everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere on this roster, and you can't do it all. And that's kind of this was always for me. This was kind of a 3-year deal. And so again, I'm more just bothered right now that you haven't seen the progress you want to see out of the groups that they've addressed than the fact they didn't address all the groups, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a ton of sense. It's like, you're not seeing as much of the progress, but you obviously can't add to that. I mean, you technically can add to their roster in every spot, but the Jets weren't going to go add a veteran like a Zach Ertz or something at the deadline. Like, what was that going to do for them? Like, he's going to probably be gone or not be as good by the time the Jets actually were in that window. A couple of quick other things on yesterday overall. I personally, and I was not at the game yesterday, but I felt like Salah's body language, especially in the second half, was like.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I got frustrated a little bit with it because I feel like he's such a emotional, like, tempered guy, and the sideline felt dead. And I know they're getting smoked, and all those things are true. And I've been there. I've been on both sides of blowouts, and it can be tough to kind of get yourself. But I felt like he was kind of just like staring into the abyss a little bit, and I was a little frustrated with that because it felt like you're in game six. Like, you can't have guys quitting on you that early or checked out of games. Did you see the same thing, or was it kind of like me just reading TV a little bit?
Well, what I saw was in the post-game press conference, I saw a totally different guy. And we commented on that he looked just shell-shocked. And for me, it actually didn't bother me that much, because if I'm putting myself in his spot, how could you not be? Like, they weren't lying during the bye week and thinking they had everything figured out, you know? And so to go in with what I would assume was about as much confidence as they've had this season, and then get absolutely leveled by the master, you know, that has to be a shocking, hard to deal with in the moment realization. And so for me, again, as I look towards the future of this season, I still have a lot of faith in Robert Saleh. And I wouldn't say I have the same level of faith in Mike LaFleur, but I want to give him time to see if he can figure it out. To me, it's just as important to see how they react to these middle weeks here, how they react to this level of adversity, to losing the quarterback, to kind of probably having your entire belief system thrown for a little bit of a loop here. That, to me, is the interesting thing about this next month or so, is to see how they react, because they're young. They've never been through this again on – you know, in terms of that responsibility level, and let's see what happens. And, you know, Leger Douzebul is actually a great person to talk to about this, because he played for Saleh in San Francisco, and I think that they were 0-9, and he was talking yesterday about how it took Saleh a little while to find his footing as defensive coordinator too, that there were times early on where you're like, what is this guy doing here? But he did, and he adjusted. And so it's not like I'm loving what I'm saying. It's not like we're sitting here saying this is all great, but I put myself in their shoes, and I think that it had to be a pretty stunning afternoon for them. And so it's less for me about what I saw body language wise yesterday, and more for me about what the reaction is going to be moving forward. How are they going to figure it out and get out of the hole?
Yeah, this is going to be a big week, especially for this staff to kind of show that they can. Zach Taylor and the Bengals staff has gotten a lot of heat over the last couple of years, and he was probably one of the first coach fired guys that you were expecting. Obviously, they're, you know, a very good team, and they're kind of on a similar trajectory to the Jets in some ways. Like, I'm interested to see how they're going to get to do this, like, mini stretch here with these two games. I felt like this stretch had a potential to be, like, for them to go 2-2. Obviously, now that there's a wrench, throwing that with Zach being out the next couple of weeks, Becton probably is not going to be back till the Buffalo game at the earliest. I'm not sure what will happen with Mosley. Obviously, this week will be a big test. I doubt. Like, I knew he wasn't going to go the second that he popped up on the injury report randomly on a Monday after a bye. It's really a bad sign.
We talked about this. We commented on this during the game in London. Like, he looked slow in that game. You know, it looked like he was dealing with something.
Yeah, he looked like his legs were shot. I mean, playing 100 plays.
That's the thing, right? I mean, it's not all in a vacuum. I mean, that's been probably the biggest issue for me with the offense, is that you're going to kill your defense, and they had.
And they literally killed the defense. Who is maybe one or two guys that have impressed you? Obviously, it's been very up and down, mostly down, unfortunately. The Tennessee game is obviously a bright spot. Is there anyone that stood out to you that you either A, weren't expecting to be as, you know, perform as well, or a rookie that you've been really pleasantly surprised with outside of Elijah Moore?
Michael Carter. Actually, both Michael Carters. I mean, I expected Michael Carter, the running back, to be pretty good, but I've actually been really impressed with how hard he runs after contact. He's not like, he's a very shifty guy, obviously, but he really, powers through for those extra few yards. And I thought yesterday, it wasn't constant, but every time he got an opportunity, especially early on, it's like, man, he runs hard. And I really like what they have in that Michael Carter. And then, you know, the other Michael Carter, I did not expect anything out of, to be honest with you. And I kind of thought it was a little bit of a reach, and he's been really good. You know, he's been really good. And so that entire cornerback group that I did not expect anything out of, that I thought was going to be the Achilles heel of this team all season long, has been a huge bright spot. And of that crew, Michael Carter, I think has risen above, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm obviously most excited about AVT, just because I felt like it's a pick that got most people loved. And then the people that didn't were like, oh, they paid too much for a guard, all that stuff. And he's definitely,
on draft night, I said, now you, as soon as they trade up for AVT, I was like, now use all of the other picks on offensive line.
Really the whole thing.
That's, you know what I mean? And he's been great.
Roland's been very weird, because it feels like some weeks, like they look pretty good in pass pro. And then other weeks they cannot run the ball. It's really difficult. Like, they have 0 20-yard runs. I think.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, right guard and center are going to need to be addressed, to your point. And I mean, they have 3 tackles for 2 spots, which is nice. That's actually one time they have depth at receiver and tackle, but guard, right guard and center, GVR looks lost at times, and it's frustrating. Like, they run any stunt and it's, you know, it's going to be a sack.
Yeah. I mean, I always go back to the draft that I was probably most disappointed in originally, and ended up being the greatest draft of my lifetime, was when I wanted them desperately to trade up to get Reggie Bush. And then they end up with DeBrickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold. And that's, you know, that's your anchor for the next decade plus. And so that's, to me, you know, AVT looks like the real deal. AVT looks like a true building block for this franchise. And now, as you look at storyline moving forward this season, you got to get Becton back, and you got to see him healthy, and you got to see him stay on the field and look better than he looked, you know, this offseason and early.
Tampa's ugly.
Yeah. So, and then you've got all the picks in the world next year. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Keep building that offensive line. That is the single most important thing. Obviously, aside from the quarterback, but the quarterback's not going to survive if you don't have that.
If you don't have the offensive line, you're screwed there. Trying to transition to a couple quick baseball things. I'm a diehard Yankee fan.
Yes.
Obviously, the Mets, have had an interesting run here, and the Yankees have been kind of, all over the place with, what do you think is going to happen for the Mets in terms of how they're going to figure out this mess of manager, president, baseball ops, all that stuff? And B, were you surprised that not only Aaron Boone got retained, but got a 3-year extension? That felt rich.
So I'll start with that one. I wasn't actually surprised, and it's just because of the way that the league is. And I think it's something that fans have a very difficult time wrapping their heads around. And quite frankly, so does the media at times, because it's changed so rapidly and so aggressively. Aaron Boone is not the problem. Luis Rojas wasn't the problem. There are very few franchises anymore that give the manager enough rope to actually be the problem, you know? And this is the league is about collaboration with the front office, and more than even collaboration, it's about implementing what the front office wants to do. And so, you know, for me, I would prefer that a franchise go out and let their manager see what they're seeing and make, you know, gut moves on the fly based on information. But, you know, these guys are human beings, and it's not always going to go how the computer says it's going to go. And I find it ironic, and I would hope that franchises would take note of this, that the two teams in the World Series this year are led by Dusty Baker and Brian Snitker, two of the few guys that are old school. And that, and it's not to say that they don't pay attention to analytics. I think sometimes it gets too, it's one or the other. That's not what it is. It's just, it can't be all front office. It can't be all analytics. It can't be all decisions based on strict percentages or what's happened in the past or what you think will happen in the game. It's got to be based on a feel for what you're seeing and what you're seeing out of your players. But anyway, we can talk about this for a million years. But the point is that for Yankees fans who wanted to see Boone gone, if the Yankees would have fired Boone, and I know there was a lot of people, right? You're one of them, but I know there was a lot. If the Yankees would have fired Boone, they would have brought in somebody that was exactly like Boone. You know?
Yeah, that's what Michael Kay said, that he was like, they're either going to bring in, they're going to keep Boone. Unless Brian Cashman would also get fired, it's going to be, you're either having Aaron Boone or just somebody that is the same style of the analytics saying, like, if their famous line is like, Aaron Boone can do whatever he wants, but he has to explain the reason why. And it's clearly a good way of saying he's doing what we're telling him to do.
Right. And so that is the reality. And so more than anything, if they would have fired Boone, it would have probably made a large portion of the fan base happy for a little bit, but I don't think it would have changed anything. You know, I think Brian Cashman, you know, you heard in his postseason press conference, like, he recognizes that this isn't sustainable either. So, you know, let's see, if you're a Yankees fan, let's see what they do. And let's see if they realize that they got to switch up the program a little bit. And in terms of a 3-year extension, I just think if you're going to bring him back, you don't want a guy that's a lame duck. I mean, it doesn't matter what situation, what sport, when you're dealing with Major League Baseball players, if you have a guy that is on a 1-year deal or clearly isn't entrusted by the front office with a lot of belief, it's a lot easier to lose the room. And the whole point of the manager really now is to maintain the room. I mean, that's what they do. It's the personal side. On the Mets side, I'm going to be flat out honest with you. I have no idea. And I have no idea what they're going to do. And that is one of the unique things about this offseason is normally I've been covering the team since I started filling in 2014. So I full-time started covering them in 2015, but normally you have, you have a really good sense. Yeah, it was a great first year. And I was like, man, they're going to be, look at this pitching staff. They're going to be back every year. And you realize how hard it actually is. But, usually you have a good sense talking to people in the organization because you're around the same people. What is going to happen? Who's going to, you know, which way they're leaning on certain things. But, you know, this is a totally new ownership group. And they had, you know, Steve Cohen, this is not something that we probably should have been too surprised about. You have to take a full year to really understand everything that goes on with a baseball organization, how to operate in it. And so I think for him, you know, he had a lot of things to see and to figure out and to understand what he wanted to do. And now this offseason, it's about doing it. You know, last offseason, he didn't have any of that background. And so I think that, you know, obviously they took a few big swings, didn't happen. Obviously still going to look for a president of baseball operations and a GM, but it's kind of a wait and see mode. And I don't think that you can predict anything. I think anybody that's going to try and predict what this team is going to do is taking a shot in the dark, because until they make that first hire, you have no idea what the philosophy is going to be. And, you know, I expect a lot of change. I expect a lot of new personnel, but to say that I have any real idea which way they're going to go, I'd be lying. Cause I think there's only one person that has a true idea right now, and that's Steve Cohen. And I don't think he's telling too many people, which is fine. I mean, he probably shouldn't. This is, I think the best organizations keep things close to the vest sometimes. So I'm more in a wait and see mode. I know there's a lot of impatience, but I think we got to give, same way we talked about giving the Jets a little bit of time, I think you got to give this new regime a little bit of time to figure some things out.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, the Billy Bean thing and made so much sense, but he has ownership stake in the A's, and it's like a huge, that would have been a huge issue. And then like Theo Epstein didn't ever feel realistic. I felt like that was a lot of people putting, you know, of course it makes sense, but like Theo wants to be the commissioner of the MLB. I don't think
Theo wants to be the commissioner. He wants to be an owner. He wants to, you know, Theo's been there, done that. Now it's taken it to another level for him. And Billy Bean, that was a big ask, and David Stearns would have been great, but he's not available. Yeah. That's the bottom. He's not available. He's not available. So
and Cash, now you pivot. And never getting fired. So, and that was not.
And you know, the thing that you got to keep in mind too, and I know, you know, it's an easy shot to take. And I, again, trust me, I understand the frustration, because they hired people that ended up being, you know, really bad hires because of things off the field this past year. And so the benefit of the doubt isn't given to the group right now. It's more of a show me. And until you show me, there's not a lot of trust there. But David Stearns, wasn't always David Stearns. You know, David Stearns was one of these, you know, hot young executives that people thought could be this, but someone's got to give him a chance. And so I think that there are plenty of guys, there are plenty of really smart baseball people that could do the job. And, you know, I have no doubt that the Mets are going to do everything in their power to find one.
I guess last baseball one here, it felt like the Yankees and Cashman's post season presser. And it feels like obviously with the wealth that Steve Cohen has and the kind of uncertainty around the luxury tax and what, you know, may or may not happen if there's even going to be one. Do you see both teams staying under again? Because it felt like it's almost like there's no reason for them to stay under. I know it's not my money, so it's easier to spend someone else's, but how do you see, because like I feel like the Yankees are poised for like one of those off seasons where they kind of just like screw it in the 2009 off season, or the Mets obviously with the Lindor contract, but Baez and, you know, DeGrom's gonna probably have to get re-upped here eventually and all these guys. How do you see them playing out money-wise with these teams?
I don't think the luxury tax is going to be an issue for the Mets. I don't. I know and it wouldn't shock me if it's not for the Yankees either. I agree with you. I think this year was one of those, okay, now this isn't good enough anymore, and we got to go out and do something from that point of view. And so if that something is spend the money and exceed the luxury tax, I think the Yankees will do it. But the Mets, I mean, Steve Cohen said at the deadline last season that for the right moves, he'd be comfortable exceeding the luxury tax. And so I don't think it's going to be an impediment. I think the biggest thing that everybody always has to kind of take a step back and take into account is you just need to make sure that it's not for the wrong. You're not supposed to, you don't want to exceed it just to exceed it. You know, you don't want to give up this money just because you can. Be smart about it. But if there are smart moves to make, I would not think that the luxury tax is going to be an impediment for either one of these franchises. The bigger thing to me is just going to be to see how the CBA breaks down and what happens here with the uncertainty and how that affects the offseason. Do you see more people sign early because they want to lock something in? Do you see teams, you know, hold back? I mean, it could go either way. So I'm curious to see how it all breaks down, but I don't think that the luxury tax is going to be a big issue for either side.
I'd love to see them implement that salary cap floor that I know it's been floated out there. A lot of things. Yeah. I like that there's not a salary cap in baseball. I think it's really cool. And like, it's shown that it doesn't really impact like being good because you spend money. But I would like to see them force some of these teams that take huge profits and just actually spend the money, you know, for the fans overall. Last quick two things here. One, how shocked are you that the Chiefs are / Patrick Mahomes are a mess right now? And how, I don't know if it's like they ran it back one too many times, or I can't tell what happened. It's weird.
I can't tell what happened. And I mean, the defense is just horrific. And I have no idea what's going on with Mahomes. I have no idea what's going on with the turnovers. Bart saying this yesterday? We might've just been talking, but he was talking about like the greatest show on turf had a very small window. You know, these types of offenses don't usually sustain, but I think the turnovers have been just shocking from Mahomes' perspective. But the way I look at it is like, yeah, the Jets may only have one win, but the Titans beat the Bills, Titans beat the Chiefs, and the Jets beat the Titans. So they're right there. Now they're right there.
I know. They basically have my transitive property are better than the Bills, which is always good, obviously. And then the last NFL question I had for you is the Cardinals are 7-0. They've got a lot of really exciting pieces, a lot of veterans. Do you see them as being for real? Because I still feel like if I'm ranking the NFC power rankings, like I still feel like they probably are like fourth or fifth for me of who's most likely to come out of the NFC.
I have felt that way that you feel all season, and every week I keep kind of lessening, you know, like at some point they're 7-0, you know, at some point you just said they're 7-0 and they are for real. I wouldn't lay all my money on them representing the NFC in the Super Bowl yet, but I think you got to really start giving them a lot of respect here. And I think as the season progresses, they keep stacking more and more wins on top of them and putting up the types of performances that they're putting up. You got to start to say, okay, maybe they have some here. And so I don't know if I put four teams ahead of them, but I still want to see a little bit more, but it's lessening with each week.
Yeah, this week's a big week. It's like now if they win this week, they'll be in Green Bay, they'll be in the Rams and the Browns. It's like you kind of have to take them seriously. We'll close it out with World Series pick. I know Mets fans are probably not happy. Yankees fans are not happy. This has kind of worked out horribly for guys, you know, Braves obviously getting in. I was very surprised. I guess the Dodgers injuries really just were too much.
Yeah, a little too much to overcome.
I'm curious how Scherzer is going to get affected on the market, but how do you see this playing out?
So what I want to do is say how I think it's going to play out and then pick the opposite, because that's how these playoffs have gone. I mean, I'm doing some stuff on CBS Sports HQ, and I was in studio before game 4 of Boston-Houston, and David Sampson was in studio with me. And we talked for about 10 minutes about how this season is, or the series is beyond over, that the Red Sox can't lose, that Houston has no pitching and it's done and it's finished. There's no way it's even going back to Texas. It was stunning. And it's the same way with the Dodgers Braves series. So I think right now I lean pretty heavily towards the Astros, especially if those two young guys really have it figured out. You know, if you get those types of pitching performances that you got in games 5 and 6 from the Astros, that lineup is devastating. And, you know, Alvarez is awesome. And so I think it's going to be Astros. And I think they're battle tests, not that the Braves aren't, but the Astros have been there, you know, three World Series appearances in the last 5 years. So I lean Astros, but it's hard to just count out the Braves. Braves have been counted out 85 times this year, starting from preseason when they were picked to finish 10 games back of the Mets, which, you know, was crazy. And I thought the Mets were going to win the division, but a team like that has had that much success, you can't count them out. And so the moves they made at the deadline, the way that they're playing right now, I still think that their pitching is better than the Astros. I could see the Braves winning, but if you're asking for a pick, I would think it's going to be the Astros. And, you know, the weird thing about the Astros for me is that nobody wants to see the Astros and these guys win just because of what happened in 2017, but everybody wants to see Dusty Baker win. And that includes me. Yeah. You know, Dusty Baker is one of the great humans that you'll ever come across. And that certainly in this game, and to, you know, be at it for as long as he's been at it and get close before and not do it, it'd be a lot of mixed feelings from my perspective. Cause you know, I don't want those Astros to win, you know, but Dusty, it would be great to see.
It was funny. I don't know if you tweeted it or you quote tweeted. I don't remember like who had mentioned it, but like the Braves did exactly what people wanted the Mets to do at the deadline. They like in a lot of different ways, or how they just kind of re-upped in places and kind of just went for it and tried to get in the dance. And now they've, you know, without their best player, one of the 5 best players in baseball, and one of the best starters, and Ozuna. I don't even want to touch on that stuff. That's a whole nother issue.
Sure,
but is it true Dusty was like on deck for like Hank Aaron's 700, either 15th or 756? Someone like I saw that someone float that out there. It was like he was on deck for one of like Hank Aaron's biggest home runs.
Is that true?
I don't know. It
might be. Is that something? I mean, man, should I know that? Is that something I should
know? I don't know. I just saw it the other day, and I was like, this is insane. Like, there's no way that. Yeah, someone wrote Dusty Baker. I thought it was a joke, and then I guess it was not, because it started getting picked up.
A lot of traction.
Yeah, it said he was on deck for Hank Aaron's 715th home run.
Wow, how about that?
Well, hopefully he's able to take. You know, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, we appreciate you coming on. You obviously do a great job on the
course, man.
It's a fun. It's a fun show, and you guys keep it pretty real. I don't think any of the guys on that set are willing to not pull punch, you know, pony punches.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
But no, it, you know, make sure you're following Steve on Twitter. I believe it's just Steve Gelbs on Twitter. You obviously doing the pre and post Met stuff, CBS. There's a lot going on, so we obviously appreciate you going on. And next time you come on, hopefully they'll be in a little bit better spot, and we can talk more positively about the team.
You got it, Will. Anytime, man. Take care.